ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Main engine start.
I remember the day so clearly.
Two, one, liftoff.
Roger, Challenger. Obviously a major malfunction.
I ran outside as fast as I could and I looked up in the sky.
Couldn't believe it, it had exploded. I'm science reporter Fiona Pepper.
And I'm Dr. Carl.
We're going to tell you the story of Challenger.
Challenger Legacy. Search for Science Friction wherever you get your podcasts.
Or on the ABC Listen app.
Hey Kylie, when I ask you to picture America today, what springs to mind?
Hamish, I think of those astonishing pictures from Minneapolis. I think about ICE officers who look like paramilitary forces. And of course, I think of Donald Trump.
And what happens if those ICE agents in their uniforms were about to turn up at the Winter Olympics in Italy?
I'd be worried.
Would you believe me?
I'd have to fact check you, I think.
We might just do that on this episode. I'm Hamish McDonald.
I'm Kylie Morris, and it's kickoff time for Global Roaming, How Sports and Politics Collide.
So this is a really complicated story, Kylie, but it is true that some ICE agents are going to be turning up at the Milano Cortina Olympic Games, which are underway, getting underway in Italy. But there is a little more to this. It's not like they're there doing the same things that they're doing on the streets of Minneapolis.
No, we first learned about this in relation to J.D. Vance's delegation that he's taking to the Winter Olympics. The thought was originally that these are going to be ICE officers, and so there's been a big reaction to that.
I'm here at a protest in central Milan where just in a matter of days, the 2026 Winter Olympics are due to kick off. Last week, news came out that ICE agent employees would be present at the Winter Olympics, and that did not go down well here with Italians.
Faster, higher, stronger.
With more body armour. I think that's the slogan.
I mean, we shouldn't joke about it. It was deadly serious stuff when it comes to the United States. But, I mean, you can imagine what you'd think if you were in Italy and you opened the newspaper and heard that, you know, to your mountain village, some ICE officers might be turning up.
And we all know that the kind of national pride that's connected to these events, right? They'll be excited to be hosting this extraordinary thing. But you can't leave your politics outside. And that's what the Italians are saying, like, okay, if you're going to come, you come as competitors, you don't come as a political force. And I think that's why we're seeing such pushback.
There's such a long, complicated history of sport and politics. Just think back to the Berlin Olympics, for example, or even for us here in Australia, the impact that hosting the Sydney 2000 Games had on us. I think it's undeniable that these big events can shape the way the world sees a country. And what's interesting now is that not just is the US administration doing this in Italy, but it's about to host the World Cup with Canada, with Mexico. And it raises a lot of questions, including questions about boycotts and the way the world sees America today. And in a sense, that's what we're trying to unravel on this episode, the perception the world has of Trump's America.
And my question is, these events are about international cooperation, right? That's the whole point of the Olympics. That's the point in the way of the World Cup. But when you have a leader who doesn't prioritize cooperation and puts America first, how does that translate into these events?
Yeah, and look, I can imagine a world in which hosting the World Cup might be great for Trump. Like, it's a very big audience. It's 48 countries. Millions, billions of people tuning in. This is a huge moment. But, you know, if he likes the reality TV show spectacle, the World Cup is going to put the audience figures for The Apprentice season 7 in the shade, being honest. But I think, you know, it remains to be seen whether that's the way he uses this moment. I think we can get some insight into what the relationship is between Trump and FIFA by listening to this clip. It's when Trump was awarded a special prize by FIFA at the end of last year.
Mr. President, this is your prize. This is your peace prize. There is also a beautiful medal for you that you can wear everywhere you want to go.
I'm going to wear it right now.
Okay.
I want to thank, by the way, my family, my great First Lady, Melania. You're right here, and thank you very much. And I think you're going to have an event the likes of which maybe the world has never seen. Based on the enthusiasm that I've seen, I have never seen anything like it.
An event like the world has never seen is possibly true, but maybe not what President Trump had in mind. I think this is politics running headlong into sports.
I'm just kind of curious whether there's actually other layers to this story and how the Trump administration is going to use these big sporting events. Thankfully, we found someone that's looking at this really closely. Our guest on this episode is Nihal Tusi. She's a Politico senior foreign affairs correspondent. She's had a huge career reporting from all over the world, the Rohingya genocide, the aftermath of the killing of bin Laden in Pakistan. But she's now covering the Trump administration, and she's been particularly looking at this.
So, Nihal, welcome to Global Roaming.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
So, Nihal, to start off with, our perceptions of ICE, of course, these days are, you know, shaped by what we're seeing on the TV news. You know, there they are looking like a paramilitary force in all their combat gear and masks in cities like Minneapolis. Are these the guys who are going off to the Winter Olympics? And if so, why?
So the bottom line answer is no, those are not the same guys. ICE is a section of the Department of Homeland Security. And within ICE, there are other sections. One of them is known as Homeland Security Investigations. These are the guys who, they already have people overseas. And they do things like look into cybercrime, human trafficking, more traditional investigations, transnational types of investigations. And so my understanding is that they are the ones who will be working with U.S. security overseas during the Milan Games. And that security operation, the lead on that is diplomatic security. But as usual, the U.S. security forces overseas, they are a combination of different groups. But it's not going to be the guys who are out on the streets of Minneapolis grabbing people to deport.
But I guess it's interesting, despite those facts, Nihal, that you have, you know, protesters already in Italy connected to Milan, you know, carrying placards saying, "With ICE, we make Grenada," which has got to be the most Italian slogan of all time. But certainly, you know, it is the idea of the presence of these kinds of, these kinds of figures so connected to the Trump presidency that are really, you know, causing problems for and leading to opposition and protests on the streets in Europe.
Yeah, look, the brand is not great right now when it comes to ICE. And what's also interesting is even ICE at the moment in the United States right now, it's drawing from other parts of the federal government's law enforcement and security section. So there are different parts, like I believe the FBI and ATF and other types of agencies actually have sent people to help them too. And all of these guys are being painted with the same brush. And to a degree, it's not even the normal guys in ICE who are doing some of these things. It's the Border Patrol guys who are not really trained about how to work in an urban environment in a place that's not near the border. So this is just a very messy situation because they're trying to meet these quotas for deportations that are somewhat unrealistic.
But Nihal, does this say something about the way the world is seeing America today, whether the perceptions of ICE are correct or not? This is provoking alarm. People are fearful about what these agents coming to their country mean.
Yeah, it's a difficult time for many people to see these paramilitary guys on the street in the United States detaining people, even children. So I can't blame people for wondering what it means that the United States has law enforcement officials doing this and that they could be doing the same thing overseas potentially. And yeah, they are affiliating ICE. I think it's just going to become a shorthand for something that people see as very negative.
Do you think it's by design though, to some extent? Do you think the Trump administration wants the world to fear America a bit?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, part of this is about deterrence, this whole idea of peace through strength. They use the word strong and strength in so many different documents all the time, but they seem to think that it's literally always about physical strength or military strength. But, you know, there's different types of strength. And that seems to be like the only version that they really seem to like to flaunt. But look, deterrence, like I mentioned, is also an important part of it. Stephen Miller, a top Trump advisor, really does not want immigrants coming to this country. And so he's very happy when you have these types of ICE raids, you have these types of actions against immigrants, deportations, things like that, the numbers, the things that are shocking to people. He wants the world to know about them because he doesn't want people coming here. He believes that the deterrent effect is very, very important.
And Nahal, it's not only Stephen Miller. I mean, J.D. Vance, talking about the Soccer World Cup, has said of the fans, the international fans, we want them to come, but when the time is up, they'll have to go home. Otherwise, they'll have to talk to Secretary Noem. So it's as though even these fans are a kind of threat in terms of illegal immigration. And that's, so it's a bit of a, you know, it's a confusing attitude to take toward a major event like this, isn't it? Where you invite all the world's fans to come to America, but at the same time say, well, a lot of you can't come because we're not issuing you visas. And those of you who do, just make sure you leave on time.
Yeah, it's definitely a mixed message. I think that's probably the kindest way to put it. Many countries are not going to be able to send hardly anyone because they have a travel ban. They have set up a system to where they have something called the FIFA pass. So people who are trying to get tickets and visas to come see the games are going to be put in ahead of the line of many others, but they still have to meet our visa standards. They still have to, which by the way, have been severely tightened under Trump. So it is going to be extra hard. And not to mention, it's going to be expensive. And so they definitely are sending a mixed message. But that's, you know, honestly, that's just so normal for the Trump administration, is to send this contradictory, confusing, mixed message. I mean, you have no idea how many times my editors are like, what does he mean? Or what's his doctrine? Or what's the plan? And it's like a jumble in your head. It's like spaghetti. Like, you just don't know what it all means because it all just is so confusing and it undermines itself.
There are some countries, though, talking about possibly a boycott of this World Cup. Is that likely? Would that worry the Trump administration?
I think they would be quite unhappy if there was a boycott. Trump would take it as a personal affront. It would really, really make them unhappy, except maybe for Stephen Miller. But I also don't think it's going to happen. I just cannot imagine that so many countries around the world would be willing to sign up, or enough would, to a boycott for something that's so dear and near to so many hearts around the world. This is like the biggest sports extravaganza. It would just be hard to see that actually happening. But if it did, wow, what a message to send to the White House.
Nahal, talking about mixed messages, I mean, when you think about FIFA, I mean, I think Sepp Blatter, the former chairman, is one of the people who've called for a boycott. But this current version of FIFA have given, of course, famously, President Trump his Peace Prize medal, a kind of newly invented gong for the president after he missed out on the Nobel Prize. So clearly there is, at the very highest level, a positive relationship, it seems, between FIFA and the president. But when it comes to the fans and certainly many of the participating countries, they're not so sure.
Well, Gianni Infantini, who's the leader of FIFA right now, he has gone out of his way to curry favor with President Trump, including inventing this Peace Prize, which, I mean, I don't know if they're going to give another one next year, and if it's going to be to President Trump again, who knows, especially given the number of wars that are happening right now. The organization FIFA is doing a lot to try to get along with the United States. FIFA itself is an organization. I think generally there is a sense that maybe they need to do some cleaning up on their end. And I mean, I've heard people say like it's worth boycotting the World Cup just to also take down FIFA. So it's a difficult one. But yeah, I think they believe that the way to make Trump happy is to appease him. That's the FIFA approach. And so far, he seems to be getting along with them.
I suppose the conventional wisdom, though, is that these big hosting these big sporting events can be a really big soft power play, that it can help to rebrand a country or redefine a country in the positive. And just listening to you talk about this, you know, your response on the question of whether maybe it's by design that the Trump administration wants to sow a bit of fear about America, I wonder whether the opposite is true of this particular World Cup, and maybe even like what America's doing at the Milano Cortina Winter Olympics. Is it the opposite of soft power? Is it trying to rebrand, rebadge America as the tough guy, as someone not to mess with?
You know, the U.S. has always tried to do a combination of hard power and soft power. They are going to try to take advantage of the moment. And they also see it. It's not just about soft power and hard power. It's also about economic power, right? So the sports diplomacy playbook that the State Department has put together that I obtained a copy of, one of the key planks in it is that they want to use this as a way to promote the American brand economically so that foreign businesses will, for instance, look at this World Cup and be like, you know, maybe I'd like to invest in that city that is hosting that particular game. So it's a very complicated thing. And I think for them, for the United States under Trump, like they view it not so much about, oh, can we make the people of the world, the fans, happy about America? It's more like, how can we use this as a way, frankly, to help America make more money?
But this Trump administration was elected in part on cracking down on immigration. There's clearly a very big proportion of the voting public in America that doesn't want the level of immigration, that doesn't want the system to work the way it has existed. This might be quite a big, high-profile platform for America to say to anyone that might be considering going there, we're no longer open shop in the way that we were.
President Trump, personally, I don't think he cares if people come for a visit and spend money, right, and then leave. I think it's more a question of like whether people come and stay undocumented. Then they have the travel bans that prevent certain countries. And it just, like I said, there's so many contradictions to what they are doing. I don't think this is a group that really sits there and thinks strategically or comprehensively. And I'm trying to say this in a way that really is based on analytical observations of them for a long, long time. It's basically just a handful of people who are listening to what the president says and thinking, okay, I'm just going to do these five things he wants. Or in some cases, like Stephen, like convincing him to agree with their position. And then they all have different agendas and they just implement these things without thinking, well, if A is going to happen, won't that undermine C? The left hand and the right hand are not coordinating. And that's on everything, by the way. It's not just the World Cup. It's on national security. It's on this idea of whether he wants to win a peace prize or whether he wants to strike a bunch of different countries, militarily. It's things are not comprehensive, strategic, leading to an ultimate logical conclusion. And that is probably why I am, more stressed out than I have been in a long time as a journalist.
Nahal, I'm just wondering about the situation at the moment in American cities, not only like Minneapolis, of course, but Boston, for example, where they're hosting games. And right now they're being threatened with being defunded over their sanctuary city status. When you talk about the State Department's sports diplomacy playbook and the fact that they want to attract economic investment, but if this is what fans are being confronted by, it's hardly a healthy climate that would encourage investment. And just to follow from that, you know, we remember here what Sydney was like during the 2000 Olympics. You know, it's a massive logistical effort, even when there aren't, ICE agents on every corner. How are these cities going to manage to handle these World Cup matches? And I guess, will visitors be safe?
If I remember correctly, though, there were stories at the time of the Sydney Olympics about visiting athletes possibly absconding and staying. I mean, I'm sure this was a story at the time. I just wonder if our moment with the spotlight on us with the Olympics is as different as what we might be imagining.
I would argue there's not the same militaristic muscle on the street.
Sure. But I mean, a year later, running up to an election, we had the Tampa moored off Western Australia and Australian commandos coming down a rope to land on the deck full of asylum seekers picked up out of the ocean.
Nahal, what do you think? Will visitors be safe? Are they going to continue these activities right up and to until and through the World Cup? Or can you imagine that them kind of being less visible by the time the fans arrive?
With the pattern that this administration is taking, I actually don't necessarily think they'll be less visible. I think there'll be plenty of law enforcement, plenty of ICE. I mean, they kind of, you know, make it their brand to be like, yeah, we're going to be at the big events. We're going to show up on Christmas Day. But look, if you are a visitor, and again, these people who are getting visas to come here, they have to meet very stringent requirements. And these are non-immigrant visas. So they are only for like temporary visas, and then they have to go back, right? So if you're here legally, in theory, you should not have a problem, but you probably should also make sure to carry your documentation with you at all times. Let's not also forget that the president has watched what happened in Minneapolis in recent days. He has seen the polls, and by the time the World Cup games happen and are really in high gear, he might have adjusted a little bit. But this is a very unusual and strange time. And it just kind of is what it is. And do I sound completely nihilistic or what? Like
you sound a little bit spent, Nahal.
I mean, it's a very weird time. I'm watching this and I just keep thinking, is this what I think it is?
Thank you very much for your time, Nahal.
Thank you.
So, Kylie, what did you make of that? You're heading off to Milano for some Aperol spritz?
And some ice. I found it interesting. I liked the explanation from Nahal that, of course, there are lots of layers to what these different kinds of security agencies do, and we aren't going to see the same people from border security turning up in Milan to accompany JD Vance. But at the same time, as she answered to you, this is one of the problems of the perception internationally of the United States at the moment, is that people become ciphers for the Trump project, and it's the Trump project that people have problems with. It's an unfortunate beginning, even before it started, for the Milan Olympics. I think that it's getting this kind of attention. And certainly you do see it, judging by what Nahal was telling us, bleeding all the way through into the World Cup. Yeah, what did you make of it?
Look, you're right. I think we do tend to attach a lot to various elements of the Trump-US story right now and see them as emblems of everything that might be wrong with America or the state of the world or the Trump presidency, whatever, you know, flavor mix you want to choose at any given time. But, you know, I think maybe the immigration politics of America today, yeah, it's more militarized to the point that you made during the conversation with Nahal than what we experienced on Australian city streets. But I don't know if this immigration politics in America is as different to what we've experienced and voted for time and time again in Australia ever since that John Howard 2001 Tampa election.
It is also about having an uncompromising view about the fundamental right of this country to protect its borders. It's about this nation saying to the world, we are a generous, open-hearted people, taking more refugees on a per capita basis than any nation except Canada. We have a proud record of welcoming people from 140 different nations. But we will decide who comes to this country and the circumstances in which they come.
Yeah, it was actually more than 100 athletes that overstayed. 30 of them ultimately applied for asylum. After the 2006 Melbourne Commonwealth Games, 45 athletes and officials tried to stay from Bangladesh, Cameroon, Ghana, Nigeria. You know, Australia has this really messy refugee, asylum, migrant politics, and I think maybe we're just starting to live through another chapter of it again now.
I guess it depends upon whether or not you recognise what's going on in America on those city streets as actually being about immigration, or really just being about imposing a message of control and power.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have enough insight into whether these policies are working now, but I think the political response is a response to something that does exist. I think it's undeniable that there are American voters that see the levels of migration, documented or otherwise, as problematic. I mean, I remember going and covering that caravan of migrants that were coming up through Latin America, through Mexico into the United States, trying to get in. And, you know, it doesn't seem to me like the politics has particularly shifted much further at this point.
The perceptions are real, even if they're not based in fact. I mean, that's you end up making, you know, that's true of so much of the Trump era.
We're in the post-truth world, Kylie. What is fact?
That's true. Look, one of the things that I thought was really important that we did get to with Nahal, maybe Trump wants to make brand USA not necessarily the shining beacon on the hill, as you might expect of the host of a big event like the World Cup or the Olympics. But actually, maybe he's using this as an opportunity to communicate his message to the world of what his America is. And that means, yes, you will have restricted entry. You will be asked to behave in a particular way to get entry in the first place. Some countries won't be welcome, and you better make sure you get your flight home. I mean, it's an opportunity in a way for him to show to his MAGA supporters at home that he's consistent, right? He's consistent in the way that he deals with them, and he's consistent in the way that he deals with the world.
Should we do a little bit of feedback before we go, Kylie?
Yes, let's.
From Wendy, thank you very much for your program. So interesting, stimulating, insightful, with great questions and guests. Opens a window and connects me with different ideas of what's going on in the world. Look, thank you very much, Wendy. We're getting lots of lovely emails at the moment about the new format, the extended format, the email address global.roaming@abc.net.au. Please keep them coming. And Kylie, there's one from James which has a request about a future episode.
Yeah, we've got a great one from James. He was writing to us about last Tuesday's episode on Japan. He liked the conversation. He thought it was an engaging discussion to learn more about Sanae Takaichi and her foreign policy. One of the things, of course, about Takaichi is that she is a hawk on China. We spoke to the former ambassador to Australia, Shingo Yamagami, who made it very clear that he thought that there was a more assertive posture that would be taken or is being taken by Tokyo toward Beijing. But James also wanted to know whether or not we couldn't speak to a Chinese historian or a historian of China to talk about the long-term relationship between China and Japan. So that's a really good suggestion, James, so we appreciate
that.
Still a
heavily disputed chapter of history. Latika and Geraldine taking the reins tomorrow. They're taking you to Iran, or more precisely, an armada of American naval vessels positioning somewhere near Iran.
Indeed, what comes next? And I think they also want to get into what is happening in Iran now that it seems these protests have been so violently put down. What's the future of the regime? What's the future of protest? Will Iranians ever protest again?
At 11 a.m. and 9 p.m. on Radio National, or search Global Roaming on ABC Listen. Kylie, until next time.
Thanks, Hamish.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.